Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to go inside the intelligence community as far as we can go. And Ella McCarthy, President, Intelligence and National Security Alliance. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning, Bob.
And I cut that short. Ellen is going to lead us, not inside the intelligence community, but I find it fascinating. Ellen was on, it was a good few months ago, and I thought the show was rather captivating. But why don't we do this first? What is Intelligence and National Security Alliance's mission? What do you all do? And how do you do it?
You know, Bob, I always start with what we don't do. We're not a trade association, and we're not necessarily a think tank in the truest sense of the word. But we are an alliance of members, both in the public sector and private sector, who support the intelligence community substantively or in a support role, acquisition, resources, contractors, academics. And so we get together on a fairly regular basis, and we will tackle whatever issues need to be discussed. And we provide a forum where this can be an ethical discussion, given that we're a not-for-profit. So there is no lobbying that is ongoing. There is no, you know, we're not there to take money from the government. We're just a group of people who are interested in supporting the IC.
Okay, and you're not just interested, you were with the federal government.
Yes.
In that area, correct?
For 23 years.
23 years. What did you start at, 13?
I did. I was 12, I think.
Yeah. Okay. 23 years.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, I mean, so you know that side, and it isn't that we're here trying to sell anything. Like you say, there's nothing to sell, and you represent the community, and you know the community.
Yeah, I you know, when I left, I didn't retire. I love working in the government. I would like to think that at some point I'll go back to working in the government, but I really believe, and maybe this is something we can talk about a little later, that just about everybody, certainly in the intelligence community, should spend a little bit of time in the private sector to really get a sense of how the private sector works, you know, some of its industrial processes, how businesses are run. I mean, it has been an incredible tour, and certainly an experience that will come in handy should I go back to the government. So
that's interesting you say that, how businesses are run, because I would imagine one of the missions, if you will, of the intelligence agencies would be to peel back the layers on the proverbial onion of a business and see if it really is a business or it's something else.
Right.
Yeah.
And yes, to see if it is a business. But there's also lessons to be had from us, presuming you are dealing with businesses, because really we're all in business, whether you're in government or in the private sector. Of course, one is, you know, very focused on profit and the other is focused on mission. But nonetheless, there are lessons to be learned. So.
Okay. And one of your missions, and you best or told me about this, the American Security Challenge Program.
Right.
Now, that, I know that's a favorite of yours.
That is. Well, it certainly is one we are very excited about. At this point in time, we are hosting the American Security Challenge in November, but really the contest is ongoing right now. I describe it as speed dating for technologists. It's really about finding new and innovative technologies that are of interest to some larger private sector companies, and ultimately the intelligence community. You know, there's a lot of great ideas. There's folks right now, small firms, 5-7 people, and they have this great new idea. Their ability to get it to larger companies or to the government is very challenging right now. If you don't have a security clearance, if you don't know someone, you're concerned about proprietary information. And so that's proving to be very challenging for these small companies. But more importantly, the government and the larger systems integrators are not benefiting from your ideas as well. And so the premise of the American Security Challenge is for some of these smaller companies to submit their ideas. We will, on our website, insaonline.com, we advertise what kind of technologies we're looking for. And for a nominal fee, these companies can submit, I'm saying nominal, $90 or less, they can submit their great ideas, their great projects, and potentially get picked up by these bigger companies or the government. So I would encourage you to go to our website. It's not just about making money. It's also about finding great ideas, finding great technologies.
Okay, what's that website slow?
Slow. It's INSA Online, INSAONLINE.org.
Okay, so this is an opportunity then for somebody that maybe has limited resources, great idea, but potentially they're not so great marketing, and they can go to the best of the best.
Right.
And you can look at it, dissect it, and say, yes, no, maybe so, this needs buffing, or this needs redone.
That's exactly. The process is such that you would submit a proposal. There are a team of reviewers that will review that proposal and assess how they work relative to the criteria which have been laid out. The project leads will get feedback throughout this process, which is very valuable in itself. But ultimately, after it goes through a two-level review process, there's a very good chance that you'll get selected to meet with either these larger companies or the federal government and get a pilot, which really is the goal at the end of the day. And certainly the benefit to the government is that they see new technologies that they might not have otherwise seen, and they meet new folks, new faces, and make new connections. So it is really a win-win.
So it's actually given some of the smaller entrepreneurs, if you will, an opportunity that they might otherwise not have because it can't compete with the big companies.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, it's getting tougher and tougher. I would say over the last 5 to 10 years, there's this whole segment in the private sector that has disappeared, sort of middle-sized companies who used to serve the role of introducing the government or larger companies to some of these smaller innovative technologists. And they've all but gone away. They've been sucked up by larger companies. There's been mergers. And so there's this gap right now. And it's very difficult for some of your listeners to meet with folks in the government or in some of these larger companies and show what they've got. So this is a chance to do that. As I said, it's speed dating.
Okay. Do you ever find that some of these folks may, in fact, come from the intelligence community ranks, but maybe nobody's paid attention to them or they're a little geeky or whatnot, and but they, on the side, have developed this? I guess it's pretty hard to do it if you're in that world, but do you ever find people like that?
Well, I think if you've been in the intelligence community and you have a security clearance and you decide to leave to build this great new system or you have this great new idea, you have it a little easier because the intelligence community really is, we are a community in the sense that we all tend to know one another. It's not a huge community. It's huge. That's another discussion. It is a large community, but you tend to know one another. And so those folks really have, in some regards, a step up because they know the people they need to go to and they can have these discussions. It's the newer folks. You know, it's the folks who've never worked in the intelligence community or within the federal government that don't have it so easy. Making connections requires networking. If you're a small business, 5 to 6 people, you know, focusing on the development of your technology, it's hard to make those connections. You don't have the time to pursue some of these networking opportunities. So here is a chance for, again, a nominal fee to make those connections.
All right. So you're a little bit of an incubator here as well. As you were telling me, how many interns do you have at any particular time?
INSA has 7 graduate student interns, 5 to 7 graduate student interns at any given time. And I'll tell you, they really are the heart and soul of INSA. We have relationships with all the local universities. And there is an application process to become an intern at INSA. And while the pay is not particularly great and the benefits are not particularly great, if you do a good job, you'll get a job either in the public or private sector. Every intern we've had has gotten a job. In fact, this semester, 3 of our 5 interns got jobs, one at the Defense Intelligence Agency, one at the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, and one at the Department of Homeland Security. And that's all because of their time at INSA. And again, it's about making connections and networking. And that's what we provide our interns.
Now, on that website again, insaonline.com, is there an ability...
.org,
excuse me.
Yeah,
is there a way then for somebody like what we're just talking about, a budding intern, to access?
I would say go to our website, there's contact info. Please send an email. Send me an email. I'll be happy to take your resume and interview you. But in fact, we're looking for interns for the fall semester. So,
and how do they get to you?
Okay, that would be E. McCarthy, E. M. C. C. A. R. T. H. Y. at INSA Online, INSAONLINE.org.
Great. .org. Don't be like me. .com. .org. All righty. So if we're saying, okay, we're looking for these people for the interns, what does an agency look for an employee? How do you get into one? I remember when you were on the show before, and I got to ask it again. Who need not apply? I mean, there are some people that might have some things in their background or they might be quirky. Who need not apply? And then we'll talk about who should.
Well, I've got to tell you, I think there's very few people who need not apply. Those who, you know, in terms of skill sets, the intelligence community is looking for a variety of skill sets, everything from engineers, mathematicians, to art history majors. But in terms of the concern that given the security clearance process, I mean, you do have to be very, very aware of that, but not to the point where a speeding ticket or illegal drug use, don't let that be a prohibiting factor in terms of coming into the intelligence community. The most important thing is to be honest about your history, and you know who you are. You know who should apply and who shouldn't apply, but you know, in general, we look for all kinds of people. So
you would look for, interesting you say that, art history?
Oh, absolutely.
Is there a mindset there, or is it a...
Well, you know, I'll tell you, art history majors, they tend to look at things a little differently than, say, an engineer. Some of the best analysts I've met have been art history majors who can look at large amount of data, who can look at photos, imagery, and see things entirely differently. And that's a huge benefit for the intelligence community. Critical thinking comes in many, many ways. Yes, art history majors definitely should think about it.
So that would have the creative side. I didn't think of that.
Right.
So.
They'd look at a picture and see something that you or I might not see, Bob.
Mm. Now, for those of you that would like to speak with Ellen, ask Ellen a question. We're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. It's about 10:20 a.m. Monday, July 18th. And don't call us after 10:55 today because we won't answer the phone. But you can email us, and probably it would be good to email Ellen, which she gave you the email address, and we'll do it again. But anyway, if you'd like to call and talk now, that's great. All righty. So we have diverse from... art history, not to beat on that, but engineers, I'd imagine, accountants,
computer scientists, acquisition people. I would say acquisition people, especially the intelligence community is always looking for folks who have acquisition experience, which means folks who are already working in the private sector to come in and help them in the business of contracting and procuring new systems and capabilities.
And I'd imagine. Linguist.
That goes without saying. Linguists, absolutely. I don't meet a college student, a high school student yet, and I don't encourage them to take one or two languages. It's that goes without saying now.
Especially Farsi, huh?
You know which languages are. Chinese.
All righty. So you look for that. They look for that. But beyond that, people might like or love what they do, and they should really like what they do. How about compensation? Is there a different compensation arrangement within the federal government with regard to the intelligence community that there wouldn't be if they were at a non-intelligence agency?
Yes, absolutely. So the intelligence community runs under different authorities, and included in those authorities are different compensation policies and regulations. So the Department of Defense tends to run under Title 10. The agencies there, Defense Intelligence Agency, NGA, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, NSA, all the defense intelligence agencies fall under Title 10 and have one set of compensation authorities. Some of the other agencies, the Central Intelligence Agency, falls under Title 50, and they have their own set of compensation, HR policies, and authorities. So it is a little confusing as you look across the community. But in general, all of our civilians are accepted service, which means they can be hired directly, so they don't have to follow some of the other procedures that the other agencies in government have to with regard to OPM. At the senior executive level, that also applies. There's just a completely different process. You don't necessarily, and some of the agencies have to go through OPM procedures. They have their own set. With regard to retirement, it's pretty much the same. TSP and FERS applies to, you know, to folks in the intelligence community just like everywhere else in the government. But I'll say that the accepted service side really is a benefit because you can be hired directly, which also means that networking and making connections is critically important. Just sending in a resume, you know, is not always the most effective way to be selected. It really is about knowing people, meeting people, finding people, making connections because of this authority. So I would encourage any of your listeners to come to our website, look at what's going on at INSA. There's numerous events throughout town where the intelligence community will have meetings, they'll have speakers, and I would highly encourage your folks to start making those connections.
In the last couple of years, I've noticed the intelligence agencies have job fairs. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever saw that before, and I remember the first time I heard it, I said, they're doing what?
Right.
And job fairs.
Well, I'll tell you that post 9/11, which will be 10 years ago this year, which is unbelievable, there was a huge move to bring in new people. And that was largely a factor of the 90s, where the intelligence community took some substantial cuts as a result of the peace dividend. Soviet Union was no longer our enemy. You know, that we were in a relatively peaceful period. There was budget cuts. People left. So the intelligence community was not very substantial, certainly not as substantive as was necessary post 9/11, where now the world was a much different place. And the agencies were hiring like crazy. And job fairs are a great way to meet people quickly and to hire people on the spot. I have to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I think there will always be job fairs, but I'm not sure we will have the hiring that we had back over the last 5 or so years, given the budget realities of today. The Director of National Intelligence, Director Clapper, has indicated that he's going to be very smart about how he manages the community, however, and we're not going to repeat what we did in the 90s in terms of just axing out entire segments of personnel. Now they're going to be far more targeted in terms of how they manage the community, and they're always going to be looking for new, experienced, bright young people, because we don't want to go back to the time that we were in just post 9/11 in terms of this there were just huge gaps in our knowledge, which we won't do again this time.
Okay. Once somebody gets to an agency, you've got a bullet point here, ability to experience work in a variety of agencies through joint duty assignments. What's a joint duty assignment?
I'll tell you, I love the joint duty program. That was actually a legislative program just, again, after the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act of the early 2000s, which required that any civilian who intends to be promoted to the senior executive level do a joint duty assignment, which means they spend 1 to 2 to 3 years working in another agency within the intelligence community, or even just within another agency period, but mostly within the IC, to gain some exposure to the other communities, to get some experience outside their own home agency. Before this time, again, it was not unusual for someone to get hired by CIA, and that's where they would spend their entire career, and they would never leave. It's hard to be a community if you don't know how the other agencies, Defense Intelligence Agency or NGA, work. So really, this was about getting people to move around a little bit, and I think it's been a fairly successful program. It was actually modeled after the military. The Goldwater-Nichols Act, back in the 80s, required that military officers do joint duty assignments in order to get promoted to flag ranks. And it's been highly successful for the military, given that all of our operations are now joint operations now. And so the same is the goal for the civilian side within the intelligence community.
Neat.
It is pretty neat.
All righty. Now, let's say we've got somebody late high school, mid-college. What does it take if they're planning to join the intelligence community on the federal side? What should they be doing now so that they get easier access later?
Okay. Well, if you're in high school or college, I think the first step is to first study, get good grades. You know, I have to say, people in the intelligence community, they're a pretty bright lot. And so these are all people, grades are important. That's something that will be looked at when you apply for a job. Master's degrees are pretty much the norm. So I'm not suggesting that those as undergraduates don't apply for positions in the intelligence community, but you definitely will want to look at some point in your career, continuing your education. And then, as I mentioned a little earlier, it really is. Sending in a resume is very difficult. People do get jobs by applying for positions that are advertised online. But really, the best way is to make some sort of personal connection. Within each of our universities, there are speaking series, there are symposia. I would highly encourage these students to participate in those. Introduce themselves to whoever is speaking. There are working groups. And I'll tell you, internships. I am so glad that I am not in college now. I'm not sure I could have afforded it, but you know, most of the kids that I'm seeing right now have done these amazing internships overseas, within some of the intelligence agencies, within private sector companies. That is really critical, not only in terms of the experience, but again, the connections that these folks make. I've my own intern program. We've had a highly successful intel program, and it's because these young people are meeting folks who are working in the community or in the private sector, are making relationships. They're working together on papers or legislation. They're developing their own network, and they're getting picked up. And that really is the best way to do it.
Let's say something comes into you for an intern, and you've got your intern slotted for the next however many months, and you just can't take anymore. Do you ever share that with I won't say competitors, with others?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great idea, is to definitely, I make it a point to try any intern who doesn't get picked up, to try and encourage them to either come back the next semester or to go to other places. So yes, we would absolutely share them. I will say one thing about our interns is, given that we work so closely with the intelligence community, most of our members at INSA are either in the IC or have been in the IC. They know sort of what they're looking for, and there is a, you know, it's a pretty competitive process, but it's totally worth it. So,
okay. So, and then somebody prepping for courses, like you say, language, I would imagine computer skills, math, but you also mentioned some of the arts. So I guess it's what your passion is. And if you can turn your passion into this, community,
right.
I don't know how you do that, but I guess they email you and ask. Huh?
Absolutely. Please do.
Or they listen to this show. Maybe we can pipe this show into some of the intranets in the community.
Yeah.
And we deal with a fair amount of them, not like you, but anyway. Scholarships and financial aid. We talked about cooperative education programs. Scholarships. Where does one go look for scholarships? This is what I want to do, but I need some help or I can't do it.
Well, within the IC, there are various scholarships that have been legislated, and I would offer that your best bet is to go actually to the Office of the DNI's website. And you know what? I don't have that off the top of my head. I would just recommend that you Google Office of DNI, and within on their website, they will provide you much information on access to scholarships and fellowships. Which are available not only to folks outside the intelligence community, but those who are inside who are looking for continuing education. In terms of financial aid, there are programs within the government as well as within the intelligence community where student loans will be paid off as a result of, you know, your time in the government. I actually have an intern right now who is being picked up by Department of Homeland Security, and her student loan, it's part of her student loan, is being paid for. So, you know, that's certainly... you know, a nice deal. I already talked about internships. I mean, they're almost what you have to do now. I waitressed, so I wouldn't be able to do that anymore. But really, I would again encourage you to go to the DNI's website, and really you'll find there's an incredible amount of information on various scholarships and financial programs.
What's DNI?
The Director of National Intelligence. So
okay. Whoa.
For those of you who, just a little history of the IC. Before the Intelligence Reform Act in the early 2000s, this was following the 9/11 crisis, directed that there be a Director of National Intelligence whose job it was to integrate and oversee all now 16 agencies in the intelligence community. Again, the concern was there was not enough information sharing going on, and as a result, we had a 9/11. There's certainly a lot of other cases in history of where the intelligence community has been viewed as a failure. So the DNI's job is really to ensure that these agencies work together. They're managed in, there's similar benefits, there's similar programs, similar access to data. And so I would say that for anybody who's looking to get into the intelligence community, the DNI's website on the unclassified side has got all sorts of information about job openings, about other agencies' activities, about job fairs, about scholarships. So I would encourage your listeners to go to that website if they're interested in supporting the IC.
We've got all kinds of websites.
Yeah, that's the IC.
Okay. And just as an aside, this is my pet. I'm a tax accountant finance type, but there's special income tax considerations, for example, for the intelligence community. If somebody was to be transferred outside of their, quote, tax home, and they needed to sell their house but couldn't, they'd get an extension on the number of years in which to sell it, and they also get some other, all their compensation might not be fully taxable. Now, I don't think you join anything just to save taxes, but it's just another piece of icing on the proverbial cake.
Yeah, it is, and this is where the community is not so much of a community when you look at some of the underlying authorities and procedures. It really is 16 agencies that were brought together, but they all have different authorities and different policy structures, and even with regard to income tax opportunities, there are some differences. Again, those agencies that fall under the Department of Defense, and maybe to step back for a minute, most of the intelligence agencies fall under other departments. So as an example, the United States Coast Guard and the Intelligence and Analysis section of the Department of Homeland Security fall under Department of Homeland Security, who have their own set of personnel policies and tax policies and perks. The Central Intelligence Agency, it actually has its own set of authorities. Most of the other agencies fall under the Department of Defense, so NGA, NSA, NRO, DIA, the Service Intel Organizations, they all fall under the Department of Defense, which has its own structure. So to be a person who is being sent overseas to buy a house within the Department of Defense, you may have certain authorities that are different from somebody who's sent to that same, who could be your neighbor, who's a CIA analyst. And that actually is a source of some frustration. Now that we are more joint, I have heard cases of where you have CIA analysts and DIA analysts stationed overseas who have entirely different policies and procedures regarding their pay, benefits, and that is an issue that the DNI is the Director of National Intelligence has to deal with. But again, it's very difficult given the construct of the law.
It's kind of like the military. These people, why do we have to have this, that, and other? We should just have one military. Do you ever see one intelligence agency?
If you look at the history of the intelligence community going back to the OSS, every reform, sort of every age of reform seems to be putting the community closer together. The Intelligence Reform Act came this close. It was very close to saying we're just going to have one intelligence agency. But there was many in Congress for a whole host of reasons, and most of them I have to say I agree with, that said that's not necessarily a good idea, having just one intelligence agency. There is some benefit to having some overlap and some differing opinion when you're doing such a critical job. So potentially a little bit of overlap is not bad. And having a natural tension between some agencies is not necessarily a bad thing. But I tell you, I wouldn't be surprised if within my lifetime that we move more towards that construct.
One. Wow. You mentioned this OSS. Now, that's a long time ago. What, right. what did it stand for?
The Office of Securities Services, OSS. Yeah, you should know this.
It's funny you say it. In the morning, Nancy and I read the paper, and she said, look at this. This lady was at the OSS, and she passed, and she was in her 90s.
Right.
All by herself. I guess she didn't talk to anybody, never right. got married, and was just kind of interesting. And then I said, oh, I guess that's a predecessor of... But I'm not so sure everybody under, not that I'm so smart, but I said, OSS, I've heard that before.
Oh, the intelligence community has a fascinating history. The Spy Museum is a great place to get a little taste of what, you know, how the intelligence community came together. But we are, as I said, 16 agencies, all who do things a little differently. We have a different focus. We fall under different departments. So the Director of National Intelligence has a very challenging job in terms of making sure these agencies are working together. Again, when they have a history such as CIA, which goes back to the OSS, a very proud history. They have their own culture and their own way of doing things, and change is hard.
Yeah. Funny, and I think it's a small community, too. We teach in front of a fair number, and I was walking out with a gentleman. It was probably 6 or 8 months ago, and I called you up and told you about this, and I mentioned that I knew you, and he goes, oh, we were in dirt together.
Yeah.
And I go, Alan, in dirt? I said, what's that? Oh.
Yeah, the Defense Intelligence Reform Team. I remember telling my boss, you realize by naming us this, we will be the dirt, and he liked that. So we all worked for the dirt.
Anyway, so it's a small community, and he was the senior level whatever,
and
of course he had to escort me out. I can't walk the halls even to go out by myself. I made the mistake many years ago, well before 9/11, and I just decided I was in this one building and I'd like to walk down the halls to see if it was any different than any others. And before I'm not kidding, before I got 20 feet, there were two police officers on me. He said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'd like to just, no." Back in your pack in your training room,
and you can't walk the halls.
They said I had a chip or something in my badge, and that's how I could tell. And then one more, to me, this is fascinating. And I was in another building, way away from where you would think, and walking down the hall, and these red lights were up going on like there was a fire alarm, and people were just very nonchalant. And I said to my escort, I said, "What's that mean?" And they go, "That means you're in here." And I go, "What's that mean? That you aren't classified or you're not.
You're uncleared.
You're uncleared." And I go, "Oh."
And now we have to deal with the lights because you're walking around the space.
Well, that's okay. It makes sense.
It does make sense.
Actually, I could be looking at stuff I shouldn't be looking at, but not that I would. I wouldn't do that.
You know, Bob, you made the point about we're not so big. That's actually, I'm glad you made that point because given the budget reality, we actually are big. Again, if you look at the trend, certainly over the last 10 years, the intelligence community has grown at an extraordinary rate. And so now there is some concern that potentially it's too big, which gets in again to why the DNI's job is so tough. How do you potentially make some changes, make some cuts without impacting its ability to do its mission? We just had a huge success a couple of months ago with Osama bin Laden. You know, there has definitely some concern that Congress is going to look at the community and say, look, we've got Osama bin Laden, time to take cuts. We've got to be very careful about that. I think everybody agrees that the community has gotten very big and that there are areas where there should be some cuts. But we have to be very careful in where we take those cuts. So
I would hope we would know that. I would hope. All right. Now, once you're in it, can you gravitate toward, let's say you came in as a an interpreter. Are you going to be an interpreter for your career, or can you go off and be a code analyst, or could you, so you're not, it's not lockstep, I got in, this is what I'm going to do for the next 20 or 30 years?
No, INSA hosts a series of quarterly mentoring events, and that's actually a subject that just came up at the one we had last week with a fellow named Jake Jacoby, Vice Admiral Jake Jacoby, who was the director of DIA, and Terry Roberts, who was the deputy director of Naval Intelligence. And really the advice given to some of these young people was, your first step is just to get in. You know, you're this young person, you have this passion, you're an arts major, and your passion is to be an imagery analyst at the National Geospatial Agency. But given the realities of finding a job right now, sometimes your best bet is just to get into the intelligence community. And so the advice that was given, and I have to say I completely agree with, is that getting in is a great first step. Because once you're in, once you have your clearance, and once you're now a part of the community, moving around is much easier. There's joint duty opportunities. There's other job openings. It's easy to see what jobs are available. And there, so you're, there is an opportunity to definitely make, you know, moves across the community. And in the case of your interpreter, absolutely, with language skills especially, there's so many opportunities for people with language skills to do all sorts of things, whether it's analysis or collections, or even in the support side of the house, acquisition or resources. So there's a lot of opportunity to move around. But like anything, you know, you sort of have to make a decision. Am I going to be an expert at one thing for my career, or am I going to just be a little more broad in terms of my career path? I chose to be broad. I've done a number of different things because I can't keep a job. But there are lots of people in the intelligence community who've decided that, you know, they want to be an imagery analyst focusing on a particular country, and that's what they'll do their whole career. So that's a decision you have to make.
Actually, that's probably kind of a neat thing. Now, in my world, tax world, I'll see somebody either come from one agency and go to another, and my feeling is they're not in this other agency for anything else other than intelligence, but they're not about to say, and I'm not about to ask.
Right.
And then I'll notice pay jumps, and I'll notice duty assignments, and I'll go, but you can't say anything.
Right.
And I wouldn't. But I find that interesting because you can kind of see it there, and I go, good for them.
Right. Yeah, that's in some cases they can't, well.
No, they're not going to say.
They're not going to say anything, and you you don't have a need to know.
No. So. And you know, I think I learned that right. Long ago. I said something like, why? And they go, well, just because. And I go, oh. All righty. So we covered what a student should do, what somebody that it isn't a student should do to join the intelligence community, and we know to email you or go to your website. And what's the website again?
www.insaonline.org, insaonline.org.
Okay, and on that website, folks, it's not only the website, because there's a lot, I looked at the website, yeah, there's a lot of stuff there, but there's this American Security Challenge program mentioned there, there's the internship mentioned. And
we have a lot going on. We have our next big event is actually the week of September 7th, and this is looking at Homeland Security Intelligence. It's a symposium we're hosting with the Center CSIS, the Center for Security and International Studies, which is a think tank, that's taken a hard look over the last year at what we've done right and what we haven't done right since 9/11, and specifically focusing on the domestic side of the house, the domestic and law enforcement side. How has the intelligence community done in terms of supporting them? What are some of the good things? What are some challenges that we're still facing? That's going to be a very interesting day. We've got John Brennan, the Homeland Security Advisor, the Counterterrorism Advisor, and his predecessor, Fran Townsend, our chairwoman, who are leading a keynote address. We'll have Senator Warner from Virginia and Congressman King from New York talking about the legislative perspective on all of this. We will have some folks from the Saudi government coming in to discuss sort of the international perspective on this. And this really is capping a year-long council that we had running, led by a fellow named Joe Rozek, on how are we doing on the Homeland Security domestic intelligence side of the house. So we're very excited by that. We're going to follow up 2 weeks later with a symposium at the University of Maryland on cyber education. We're meeting with a number of universities around the area to look with the private sector to look at what is a cyber expert? What are the skill sets that are required to be a cyber expert? Where are the jobs for cybersecurity? I'm very excited by this one, given that cyber is such a huge and up-and-coming area, and some of the young folks who may be listening to this program might want to consider that as a career field. You don't have to be a computer scientist to work in the cyber field. It's a fascinating field where forensics and tracking down hackers can be a very fulfilling job. And that's something that we'll be looking at the University of Maryland. We'll have the American Security Challenge, which really is all about bringing technologies together. We'll have a mentoring session sometime in the fall. And again, that's a great opportunity for some of your younger listeners to meet some of the more seasoned experts in the intelligence community. We have the Achievement Awards, which is an award ceremony for younger GS-13 and equivalent analysts who've shown just real leadership capability in the intelligence community. And so it's an opportunity to recognize some of those folks, future leaders in the intelligence community. So we have a lot going on this year.
So in these symposiums, these meetings, are they for the trade only or can public come?
For the Homeland Security event, absolutely public. It is open to the public. So I would say, again, keep an eye on our website. That's going to be an incredible event.
I was going to say, even if you're not looking to join it, somebody like me, I know what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. But after listening to this, maybe I'm not. But that might be really interesting to attend.
That event is going to be very interesting. It'll very likely it'll also be televised. So if you can't get there, it'll be picked up by some of the local networks, C-SPAN, CNN-type networks. But that's not been finalized yet. But we're very excited about this one. We've spent a year working on this. So.
And that one is the week of what?
It's September 7th.
September 7th?
Mm-hmm. At the Ronald Reagan Center.
Culminating on the 11th?
No. It is a big week, given that it is the 10-year anniversary. But this is really a symposium focused on the policy side and how are we doing.
Okay. And are you going to speak at any of these?
Oh, I'll be there. Yes.
I'd imagine.
Yes.
I would love to hear that.
Yeah.
All righty. Final thoughts. I think we've covered. There isn't much we haven't covered. Entry, early age. Entry, less than early age. Entry, middle age, and probably entry at a later age. Nah. There's. You tell me. I don't know, but I'd imagine there's a learning curve there and a trust curve that. It's going to take some time.
I think you're right, although I'll tell you, I don't want to discourage anybody from applying for a job in the intelligence community. Certainly there are prior military officers, retired law enforcement officers. They are very much wanted within the intelligence community because they have the experience in the national security field. They know the people, they know the mission, and there's absolutely a need for folks like that. To be honest with you, I think that's something the community should really spend some time focusing on, is not losing expertise. So somebody retires as a captain or a colonel, being able to find civilian positions in the intelligence community is it's good for everybody. And that's not always so easy. So there does need to be some focus on that.
Could I go there for just a second? Because I think, one, with people returning from Afghanistan, with military hopefully returning, not right away, but sooner rather than later, there'd be some people coming back.
Right.
And we speak, I don't know that there's too many law enforcement groups we don't speak to.
Right.
I never thought of it, because they retire. You know, some of them are retiring middle 40s,
right,
and generally not more than 55.
Right.
And I don't know that they know that.
Yeah, I think, and I've heard this, it's interesting, not so much on the law enforcement side, but I've certainly heard it on the military side from officers who will say, look, I really would like to come back, but I'm not sure how to do this necessarily, which is interesting. So you think of somebody who's been an FBI agent or an Army colonel who has worked in the community, you would imagine that they would know how to stay in if that was something that they wanted to do. And it's not always obvious. And again, it's very dependent on the service or the agency. Of course, on the service side, if you are a veteran, you do get preferential treatment. And I would imagine that's also the case on the law enforcement side. You probably know more about that than I do, certainly. But you know, to the extent that we can offer, you know, make it easier for these folks, I think that would be a good thing. Because I do hear from a number of people who say, I'm not sure how to get in. And yet we don't want to lose them. We don't want to lose them to, you know, not necessarily the private sector, but to certainly outside of the community. We really should keep these people.
Now, some of them aren't sure what they want to do. They don't want to be a security guard and they don't want to be going through files somewhere. And when I go there now, because I do talk about second careers and starting a business and the like, I might say, hey, did you ever think of this?
Right.
The other question is, some of these folks are burned. That's why they do retire early, because they've had really a high-stress job, for a short period of time. And initially they go, I don't want to do anything. And the question there here would be, do you all hire part-time? You all meaning the intelligence community.
Right.
Do you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, and again, this is a case of we have 16 agencies who do things 16 different ways. But I will tell you that I have noticed that it's within the last 5 years, especially, the services and agencies have become much more flexible in terms of some of the hiring programs they have. On the service side, you know, enabling mothers and fathers to take a break, you know, to have a family. Absolutely, there's part-time opportunities or opportunities to work on a flexible schedule. So the community is getting, you know, much better, much more consistent with the private sector in that regard. But, I mean, it really, you do have to look at the nature of the job and, you know, In some cases, if you're working on the National Security Council, there's probably not a lot of part-time opportunity on the National Security Council. You're working more than full-time in those kind of places. So you really have to pick and choose the kind of things you want to do, but the opportunities are there.
Do you ever see opportunities for young law enforcement officers at, say, a county level or a state level? Police officers, and they're going, I don't know if I want to keep doing this because my number could get called, and I don't want it to get called. Sounds to me like they have a background that would at least be interesting in more than a first glance by the intelligence community.
Yeah, when you say number called, is that for tour overseas? Is
or
that...
or hurt or
oh,
shot?
Hurt.
Or,
I see, yeah. Yeah.
Because no, every day.
Absolutely. Those are the kind of people that should the community wants to retain their expertise and experience. So, you know, that is though. Yes, absolutely. They should consider careers in the intelligence community, certainly within the law enforcement side of the intelligence community. FBI, you know, has a large analytic core, cadre of folks. So prior law enforcement people, I would imagine, would be, you know, highly successful in those kind of positions.
I work with a number of local police officers, and I would say mid to three quarters of the way through their career. It's interesting, and it didn't dawn on me. Finally, I asked a couple of years ago, they all wanted to work the midnight shift. I said, why do you want to work the midnight shift? They said, because that's where we do the most good, and we can get there quickest. If we work the day shift, we have to go through traffic. We have to worry about the dog that's barking down the street. Yeah. And you know, they don't feel any great sense of reward.
Right.
And some of these people might, because they make them retire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing, and I work with a lot of them. So on the private sector side as well, I know my focus has been on the government side, given the topic of this show. But the reality is that the private sector is a partner with the intelligence community. We have the intelligence community cannot do what it needs to do were it not for the private sector, given their experience, the systems that are built by the private sector. So if you're a law enforcement officer or an interrogator, an interpreter who is looking for a break, the private sector absolutely offers numerous opportunities, and you will get preferential treatment. So
yeah, I have a great story on this interrogator. U.S. citizen, and this person, it was a number of years ago, and they were outside the U.S. for a fair number of years, but they were not federal government. They were private industry hired by the government. And I said, what are you doing calling me from wherever this person was? And they were in the metro D.C. area. And they said, well, I'm here. I said, how many days have you been here? And it was like 29. I said, you need to get out today because the tax law, if they're not in the States for more than 30 days, they get this terrific foreign tax exclusion. And so with the I said, anything other than the
where
States,
you are.
Go take your wife on vacation, but get out of here.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. And another one, I think I can say this. We were, we had to give a bid on doing a retirement seminar at Guantanamo Bay. And I said, I'll do it for free, but would you take me to Havana? I didn't know any better. I hate to tell you, this was not that long ago. I said, there are no roads to Havana.
From
the way you're going to get in, you're not getting in. And I go, Okay, we'll still do it, but...
I'm glad that was the answer.
That's how dopey I am.
And that was the right answer.
Just drive there, and I go, nah, yeah. And you're not going anyway. So I said, okay. All righty, so we got 2 minutes, Ellen. I don't think we need 2 minutes.
Okay.
Give me let's do some fanfare for INSA, and then for the non-INSA, the feds.
Right. Well, I'll say that... again, for those of you who are looking for information on either getting a job in the intelligence community, keeping your job in the intelligence community, or retiring from the intelligence community, I would highly encourage you to go to the Director of National Intelligence website. It's filled with all the information you will need. For those of you who are looking to get into the intelligence community, my organization is a great place to start, but there's lots of other associations, even with your own schools, local universities, to start meeting the people, making the connections you need to make. Of course, I would suggest you come to me first. I have a lot going on. We're always looking for help, for people to assist in the writing of papers, or interns who can support councils and task forces. So you can find us at www.insaonline.org. And I look forward to talking to you.
All right. This has been great.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
It was fun.
Ellen McCarthy, president of INSA. And I'm Bob Lyons, and I'll be back next week with Tammy. Tammy's going to come, and Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner. Always a great show with Karen. Short, crisp, right between your eye answers, and write your questions down. Give her a call or email us by then. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.